This is With the First Pick, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where draft season never ends. Join former Titans GM Rand Carthon and me, Ryan Wilson, three times a week for an inside look at the college all-star games, the NFL Combine, and Pro Days. It's all building toward the big stage in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania this April for the 2026 NFL Draft. Follow and listen to With the First Pick on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. All righty, welcome back in. Hour number three. Dirt and Sprague here, Portland Sports Leader, 105.1 FM, The Fan. 1080 AM, the Odyssey app, live on YouTube.
Take your hands and put it down your pants, son.
That's what Rip City's doing today. Sun's out, guns out, nice day, Blazer playoff game. You know what Dan Lanning would say?
It's time to nut up or shut up.
I think Dan Lanning last 2 days has been nutting up and shutting up.
Yeah, you talk about getting the number one quarterback. Is he ever going to play a game in an Oregon uniform?
Well, he also got the top five safety yesterday.
Yes, he did.
Who wanted his dream school was Georgia.
We'd be cooking.
Can I just quickly, without derailing, because I want to talk about the draft.
If you would like to talk some Oregon football here, I would love to talk some Oregon football here.
Well, it was funny that the day that they get the number one quarterback,
you're
you
doing
are
duck
out.
Segments without me, man? What the hell's that all about?
I thought I did a good duck segment.
Ryan Clark?
We made a valiant effort to try to hold the fort.
I got Ryan Clark on, appreciate by the way. That. Don't think you caught the interview. Ryan
Clark, same. What's
I
he
said,
doing?
Good morning, Ryan. Thanks for hopping on with us. How are you doing? And he started with, I got mushroom tattoo on my arm. Just right there.
That was it?
That was how he started
right
the
out of the gate, he got a tattoo of a mushroom on his arm?
Yeah.
Is he big into mushrooms?
I think it has, like, there's a,
it's a
symbolic
family
nature
thing. There's a family
thing.
Tie
His
to
wife's
that.
Area mm-hmm. where
In-laws
she grew
tie,
up.
Yep.
And
oh, okay.
He forages them and
he
probably
forages
pops them
for
at
the
concerts. You know, I don't remember all
is
of it.
He popping
but,
shrooms. Clark a shroom guy?
I mean, Clark's a Portland guy.
He is a Portland guy.
I'm almost surprised when people don't do shrooms now.
Yeah, I guess that's fair.
I have so many conversations. I'm like, oh, did you do that? Yeah, and I popped a mushroom. And I'm like, okay, this is just normal.
Anybody in particular you want to mention?
No.
Okay, just asking.
I mean, we know people on the air here just openly talk about doing it all the
What'd
time.
What'd you do on Friday? I went to a jam band, ate like 9 mushrooms. Sat in an Uber for like 9 hours because I couldn't move.
Slightly stupid.
No, I was going to say.
Yeah, mushroom tattoo. I digress.
The AI is going too far. Somebody has made an AI video now of Vrabel and Mussini on Maury Povich. And it's.
You are the father.
Beyond creepy.
Look, we're not.
How this is them.
There's too much going on
it's
today.
It's beyond creepy.
I don't want to let that sidecar win because that's an absolute clown show.
Dirt. It's a pretty
idea,
big clown
show. Oh, I get it. I also, like, nothing's going to happen on the football side of it. Like, Mike Vrabel's Mike Vrabel. You think the Patriots are going to do anything to Mike Vrabel for cheating on his wife? They don't care.
Well, the NFL themselves are like,
their owner
not
was getting rubbing tugs in Miami, okay? Like, they're not doing it. The last coach was open-mouth kissing his daughter after winning Super Bowls.
They had a tight end murdering people.
They had a tight end.
Still playing a game.
Murdering people, okay? Yeah. Mike Vrabel, nothing will happen to him. Now, Diana Rossini, you might end up being right there. She might be out of work for a long, long time,
might.
Not forever.
Dude, you want to make a bet on this?
I just...
She's done.
It's
a minus 8,000 that she will never work again.
It's starting to give me the heebie-jeebies, dude. The kid's name is Michael. It looks like Mike Vrabel. There's more pictures coming out. Like, I'm almost
you,
to the point of...
He looked like the husband.
I'm uncomfortable talking about it. It's
really?
Gotten to that point for me of, like, this is just... Yeah.
It's pretty unfortunate.
This
it's
is becoming
awful.
Very personal with people's lives, and...
The kid thing came in, I was like,
all right, too far to me. Just... Out of bounds. I'm going to stick to the NFL draft. So
now, as a kid who had to do a swab test for DNA, if you are the father, I can speak on this. I was not 3 years old when all this started. I was at least 18 when I did it.
You were a little bit older to have an
understanding. I was at least
of,
an adult age to say, I do want to do this. I don't want to do this.
I would like to know or not know.
This kid's going to be 7 at recess.
Poor bastard, dude.
Hey, did you watch your dad kid. This weekend in that NFC-AFC title game? It's terrible.
I feel horrible for him. Speaking of the NFL draft,
yeah,
what was your first wow moment of the night?
They showed the Patriot War Room and he wasn't in there. Because I looked. But that was at the back.
He's going training on Saturday. Don't worry. Day one of the draft, I'm not training yet or counseling. But now it's time for counseling. Okay, got it.
The weekend is going to be tough for old Mikey.
They have 10 picks, I think, today and tomorrow.
Yeah,
but
well, you can't miss those.
No, of course not.
First wow moment of the NFL
draft? Yeah,
what
was the first moment you go, oh, because the first pick was obvious, like, all right, that get it
well,
over with. We knew.
I'm going to go selfish on you, okay?
Yes, go for it.
The first one for me personally was my first and only draft bet I hit.
Ooh.
So about 10 minutes before the draft, I opened up DraftKings, and I wanted to place a couple bets. And one bet that I liked, I found out I was a big underdog. Not like huge, but the number two pick at the start of the draft, Arvel Reese was a minus 250.
Oh.
And then David Bailey was like a plus 175. And I'm like,
those are great odds. I'll take them.
Wait a minute. Did I miss the blurb of this is the Arvel Reese pick and we're waiting? So I just took Bailey and I put just a couple bucks on it. That cash. That was a delightful little surprise.
Nice little moment.
The first real wow moment for me was the Titans.
Yeah.
I've actually consumed a decent amount of podcasts and like written content on this draft because I don't want to not know who all of the players are. Not one single mock or person talked about him going to Tennessee.
I think a lot of people assumed, or not assumed might not be the right word, but figured they would want to go offensive to help their young quarterback.
Right, but that was either Love or it was going to go defense.
And then Love's off the board at three because he goes to the Cardinals, which was like, that was a moment for me, which I'm sure a ton of mocks had him going there and it wasn't that big of a shocker. It was a bummer for me that he went to Arizona because they are the most irrelevant franchise, and I really love watching, no pun intended, love play football.
Yeah.
And it's like, dude, that sucks. Send him somewhere where he's going to be fun to watch, not Arizona.
I mean, he can still be fun, but the team sucks.
He's going to die on the
Bijan Robinson.
Dude. Yeah.
The Falcons are terrible, but I love watching Bijan play.
I almost feel like that's offensive to the Falcons to compare the Cardinals to them, but maybe I'm wrong in that regard. And then once he's off the board, it's like, well, who's the next best offensive weapon? Because the next, five or four picks after it were defense.
Mm.
And so, yeah, it was a shock in that regard, but it's the idea of you got a second-year quarterback. Do you want to go get him a weapon, or are you better served getting an edge rusher that you're not quite sure what the ceiling's going to be?
No, I mean, I totally get...
Because who's Tennessee's number one wide receiver last year? Calvin Ridley?
What was his? Io Manor.
Oh, yeah, the kid from Stanford?
Yeah, and he was okay, but he wasn't, like, you know, shaking up the
He's
league.
He's got nobody to throw the ball to.
No, I get in it... Rationally, I understand it. On my own point, what you said was the first surprise.
That
I
was
didn't
the first
see
one for
anybody
you.
Mocking him to Tennessee, and it was like, oh, I didn't even know if he'd be the first receiver. It was between him and Lemon was the big debate of who is receiver one in this draft.
Right.
And then, like, when was that going to happen?
Right.
And there was a lot of buzz that Tyson and Tate. And Tyson, I bet, to go fifth, because him and the Giants seemed to be a big thing. But once the Cardinals went Love... And then the Titans went Tate. I instantly was like, well, the Giants have to take, you have to take Arvel Reese now.
Yes.
And they said as much, like, he was the best non-quarterback for us on the board.
And if he's there, you knew they were going to take
him.
They just traded their best defensive lineman. So, of course, they're going to take an edge guy.
So, yeah, I think it's the combination of the Titans taking Tate and Reese falling to five. I thought that was a no-brain, easy pick for the Giants.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And then you fast forward a little bit, because that was, I think, the first. It was Love going three of like, oh, okay, he went that high, because I wasn't sure exactly where he was going to go. It's one of the reasons, though, on draft night I do chuckle about all the mocks going is that you could read 10,000 mock drafts and how many of them had Carnell Tate going fourth overall.
Mm.
And the same a year ago, how many mock drafts had Shedeur Sanders as a top five pick in the draft?
Right, yeah. We know the mocks can be wrong.
That's one of the reasons why they're fun, don't get me wrong. There's some people, I think, who read them and believe it's like a scientific, like, this is the way it's going to go. They talk to all the GMs and they have answers.
Yeah.
When you should take it with a grain of salt and have fun doing it or do your own mock draft or play around with it. Like, all of that's fun. It's like playing the lottery machine in the NBA. Ooh, did we get the number one overall pick?
Yep.
But at the end of the day, it really doesn't mean anything. And it doesn't tell you anything because the next big bombshell that I would argue that happened, and maybe there was another one along the way for you before getting there, the only bet that I made on the NFL draft, because I know how NFL teams think and I know how desperate they are, bad ones for quarterbacks, which is the irony because it flew in the face of that. This is not a bad team. I mean, it was Ty Simpson going 13 to the Rams ended up being the story of the night for me.
It ended up becoming the story of the night as more stuff came out.
But yes.
If you say, like, from the start of the draft to the Ty Simpson thing, the Chiefs traded a decent little haul to move up three
to
spots
take a corner.
To take a cornerback at six.
I think they had the thought that he wasn't going to be there at nine. They must have had intel that he wasn't going to be around by the time they drafted at nine, and they desperately wanted a corner because they traded their best corner to the Rams.
So we got audio. I mean, we'll go in and out of the Blazers in the draft today is largely what the show has become. But so interesting draft in this sense. It's not quarterback heavy, and so it's not as sexy, I think, for people to talk about, right? Because a lot of these players, maybe you've seen most of them, but some of them you don't know as much about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, did people know who Keldrick Falk was at Auburn? You may have seen him, but...
Yeah.
So unless you're reading and learning about it, you might be a little blind to some of this stuff, right? As a lot of pundits noted yesterday, that draft was incredibly buttoned up. People didn't talk. There was a lot of unpredictable moments. And the picks that were happening were shocking to some. Like, these people were covering this thing were like, whoa, what?
Huh?
Like, Love to Arizona surprised you. I wasn't really surprised by that because the buzz was that they were going to take Love if they couldn't trade out. I thought might be a Reese pick because they need an edge rusher. They drafted Walter Nolan last year.
I mean, they need everything.
Yeah, they're the Cardinals. But Love was kind of rumored to be there if they didn't trade out. The Titans going Tate, and then the Chiefs trading what they traded to get up for Mansoor Delane. I was like, whoa. And then Sonny Styles fell to the Commanders. And so it's like it all kind of like shook out in a much different way than all of the mocks and pundits had. They had right. a lot of guys in the right wheelhouse of like, this guy's going to be sub 15th pick.
Oh, yeah. You can generally guess where guys will go. It's just a question of we have no idea where they're actually going to end
up. But Benjamin Solak was like, is anybody's mock right anymore?
No.
And I think that was the tough thing was maybe you chose Bailey and you had Mendoza right. But after that, it was just like all where are they going? What are they doing? Ty Simpson easily became, I think, the story from the draft from the sense of, oh, we just heard Sean McVay talk and we looked at him.
He did not look happy. Was it a hostage video? We'll talk about that because that ended up being, I mean, look, it was very reminiscent of the Love pick to the Packers. Now, that was later in the first round. But it was very reminiscent of that, of you have a team who was on the brink. You were 4 yards away from winning the NFC, and I would argue smoking the Patriots to the Super Bowl, just like Seattle did, because the NFC title game was the actual Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You were that close, and you had the opportunity with the 13th overall pick to fill in the blank of any of these guys that ended up going after the 13th overall pick, and you chose future instead. So we'll talk about that. What does it mean long-term? Was Sean McVay being held hostage? One of the weirder stories that I can remember. Who are you winners? Who are you losers? Poor Kenyon Sadiq, definitely a loser of the night. And fun with audio. Some more draft talk next on the...
From the trusted team behind 48 Hours, welcome to Case by Case, your weekly update on the biggest true crime stories unfolding right now.
Nick Reiner remains in custody without bail.
Luigi Mangione accused of stalking and gunning down United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson.
From high-profile trials and stunning evidence to major breaks in cold cases, we'll follow it all case by case. Follow and listen to 48 Hours Case by Case wherever you get your podcasts.
Fam. By the way, checking back in from the start of the show, full circle.
Yeah.
I'd like to report I have gotten full clearance to go to the game tonight. I have been approved.
You text her?
My PTO request has been accepted. And
I've been so funny if she denied it. No, you're not.
No, excuse me?
You have a birthday. You got golf. That's enough for you. Get your ass back
now,
here.
Let's see. How far do you think I can take this? The next question will be, do you think I can get her to pick me up from golf and drop me off at the game so I don't have to drive? And then Uber home.
I don't know the...
Is that a bridge too far?
Look, I've known you a very, very long time.
Yeah.
It's a odd relationship we have where we're tight, we're cool, but like we don't really hang out that much.
Sure. We spend a lot of time together.
We do. I can't pretend to know your relationship in the ins and outs, but when I've met and been around your wife, I'm just going to say I think it's crazy you even wonder this. I think she would gladly pick you up.
Yeah, she likes me.
I just have her She's showing up and going... Get in, Andy. And you're like, oh,
hey, babe.
Yeah.
What's up, babe?
That's what I have in my mind. I don't think there's any hesitation in her mind.
I picked me a winner, Bobby.
Yeah.
I picked me a winner.
I think you did.
That's the next question.
Now,
we'll
is my wife picking me up? Yes. But is she also really pissed off at me
internally,
and not talking the whole way? Yes.
Which is funny because I feel like your wife and me are similar in that regard. Like, if the roles were reversed, I'd be like, yeah, damn. Fine.
Yeah,
there's a game on. It's the draft. Watching the draft right now. You want to ride? What are we doing here?
Right.
Is Sean McVay being held hostage by his organization?
You said Jordan Love. I see why everybody is saying that.
I mean, it's the idea of having a team who's close to winning a championship with a first-round pick.
Getting a player that can actually play this year.
That can help you win.
Like, Mekhi Lemon would have absolutely helped them.
Right. Or, I mean, go down the list. Kenyon Sadiq was three picks later. You want an edge rusher. Reuben Bain was after
Dude,
that.
Reuben Bain was
you
there.
You need some offensive line help. The kid whose name I can't pronounce from Penn State was right after that.
Right.
I mean, pick any of them you want.
I know.
All these guys were available, and they went with they decided that planning 3 years from now was more important with that pick. And I think at the time there was a thought of like, oh, all right, if McVay's into it, he's really smart with quarterbacks, he knows what he's doing, like, okay, I can kind of see it. And then the stuff comes out afterwards with the press conference and the phone call. One, the Ty Simpson said he's never spoken to Sean McVay.
He actually hadn't spoken with anybody in the org except a scout for like 20 minutes.
Like nobody. There wasn't an interview process. There wasn't a back. There wasn't a sit down.
So Les Snead reportedly has been friends with his dad, who famously coaches at, what is it, UT something?
I think.
Coaches at one of the UT schools.
Yeah, one of those UTs down there.
He's known his dad a long time. And the report is that he talked to his dad for about 30 minutes. Ty Simpson talked to a scout for about 20. Never actually talked to Les Snead or Sean McVay.
UT Martin.
UT Martin, thank you. Never talked once with Sean McVay. I'm starting to buy into the buzz. This dude, once he couldn't win a Super Bowl or be in contention, he kind of broke. The year that they were really trash, and I think they won 5 or 6 games. I think it was the year they got their edge rushers, the couple guys from Florida State.
The Baker Mayfield fill-in on 48-hour notice year.
That year.
Yeah.
All the buzz was that he might retire at the age of 30-something and just be Gruden. He might just, or Madden. He might win the Super Bowl and then like hang him up. He couldn't handle it.
Yes.
Well, now you got Stafford. You win the Super, you know, you rebuild with Stafford, you know, and all that. I'm just of the opinion that I'm starting to believe the theory that he might hang him up once Stafford hangs him up. And look, I could be way off on this. He could have just been Sean McVay was up for a long time yesterday and he looked wiped.
Yeah.
But I've seen Sean McVay in media settings and you can tell when he's visibly pissed. You can hear it. He sounded and looked like a guy that wanted nothing to do with that pick. And it's crazy to me that you want to take a quarterback and say he might be the heir apparent, only then to find out you didn't even communicate and watch film with him?
Right. It's one thing if you sat down in the process and you're like, oh my God, you guys, he's so this and that. We love his film. We love his interviews. We got him on the whiteboard. He's drawn everything up that we want him to draw up. Like, how do we not take this guy?
Ty Simpson didn't visit with the Rams during the process. He played at the Rose Bowl. It's the only time he had went to Los Angeles since his college days ended.
Right.
So
it's a very weird story in that regard.
It's an odd story, man.
That's going to age a certain way.
It's really weird.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
If you were a Packer fan, because here's the balance of it. On the one hand, you might have, we don't know what Ty Simpson is going to be in the NFL. We have no idea. Like, if he's good, is he bad? Who the hell knows? Your guess is as good as mine. If he ends up being a good starting quarterback, are you willing to risk not adding potentially a missing piece for a championship to then have the heir apparent waiting in line? This is why I think the Green Bay example is great, because Green Bay, that was in the run at the end with Rodgers, where you knew it was a matter of time. Mm-hmm. He was 38 or 30, whatever, however old he was. You're like, I mean, he's not going to play that much longer, but they were a team that could win. And so if you're a Packers fan, do you like that they took Love and that it was set up for succession? And now you have your quote-unquote franchise quarterback. Now, he hasn't won a Super Bowl.
Was that the CeeDee Lamb draft, Justin Jefferson draft?
Let me go back and look and see who was behind them.
Because that was a year where there were receivers, right? And I don't remember which class it was.
I think so. That was the 2020 NFL draft.
Oh, yeah. Then that would have been the COVID draft. That was the CeeDee Lamb, Justin Jefferson draft.
Yeah, so he went 20th overall. No, he went, where did he go? Where you at? 26th overall.
That's right.
So Ayuk was off the board. Jefferson was off the board. Jalen Reagor, first round. First off the board. CeeDee Lamb went 17th.
Yep.
Jerry Jeudy, 15th. Henry Ruggs, 12th overall.
Yeah.
So you got some of those. The guy that went behind him, I'm trying to see.
I think it was more the idea of them trading up, if I'm not
like Patrick
mistaken.
Queen was a couple. You could have got a defensive guy. Jordan Brooks went to Seattle the very next pick.
Well, okay, so
I think that's the interesting question that I think from today of, like, the McVay stuff, you might be right about him being like, I'm one out. His answers last night were genuinely weird.
They were very odd. He was like, yeah, we'll see when he gets here. He'll be battling with Stetson.
I mean, his first answer or the first question he got was, what was it about him? And he was like, I want to make one thing clear. This is Matthew Stafford's team.
Yeah.
We got Stetson. We like our room.
You know why he did that? So reporting came out, he did that specific answer because they remember when the Packers drafted Love, they did not tell Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
That was like Rodgers.
And the reports were
like
that
us.
they told Stafford. That was the report.
They told Stafford
yesterday.
Early in the day they're going to take Simpson. But yeah man, I'm not, it's a lot of speculation right now. I just, to draft an heir apparent in the top 13 when your window is, you've made it abundantly clear. Next year, if you don't win a Super Bowl, it's a massive disappointment. To look at the draft board, so
right.
Simpson's 13th. I mean, you mentioned the offensive lineman around, the Reuben Bain. You had Sadiq. I know they drafted Ferguson, but Sadiq is, you know, it's another weapon.
Yeah.
You had Lemon out there. There was a lot of Mekhi Lemon L.A. stuff because he played at USC, and they reported Malachi Lawrence, who I thought actually fell a little bit. He was a really good edge prospect out of Central Florida. He was 23rd, like Casey Concepcion, Thieneman. I mean, you have guys that are going to play next year, impact guys. Now, are they all going to hit? We don't know. They could have gone that route, and they just – they punted for like two or three more years, and he didn't seem particularly excited about it. Is all the takeaway has to be of something weird happened here. Of is this just a Les Snead favor for his dad? Because he went to the draft, and people were like, I don't know if this guy's a first-round draft pick this year.
It was a bit of a roll of the dice.
So, like, if they didn't take him, was Arizona going to jump back in?
I mean, I think somebody else would have. It's just like, it's the NFL. Like, teams are so, like, Arizona, New York, there are teams that are desperate for quarterbacks.
No doubt about it, but it was more like, if he didn't get picked there, where was it? And was he going to be the guy who chose to go to the draft for the first round and didn't get picked in the first round? So, I can't believe an organization would operate this way, but also I can't help but have that feeling based on watching them talk about him.
By the way, the first 10 picks of the second round of the draft that year are pretty funny to look back on, too, because T. Higgins was the first pick of the second round.
See, there's one example right there.
Michael Pittman was the second pick of the second round.
Yeah.
DeAndre Swift was the third pick. Like, running back, they
some
probably
good
were okay,
there,
right?
Yeah.
But it's just Jonathan Taylor, by the way, ninth pick of the second round.
Jonathan Taylor
pretty
is a backer. Career. I mean, I know Jacobs has been good, but damn, dude.
That's the interesting connection. Hey, maybe the Rams win the Super Bowl this year. They have their cake. They eat it, too. They win the championship. And by the way, we got our quarterback. We're set up for success. If they don't, and you're a play or two away, and you could go, man, we could use an edge rusher or an offensive lineman, they might be regretting that decision for a long time. A fascinating move yesterday. Of all the teams that I thought, I knew Simpson was going to go in the first round. It's the NFL, teams are desperate. I did not think it was going to be the LA Rams. That came out of absolute nowhere.
I know we're getting back into it because we got Orm coming up and we got audio, but I'll just say, dude, I hate when I have to admit stuff about teams that I don't like. Damn it, did I love the Cowboys.
How about them Cowboys?
Dude, they got Downs and they got Lawrence. The Giants, I thought, made out really well, addressing offensive line and getting an edge rusher. I'm like,
I might put a ticket on the Cowboys to win the Super Bowl.
You going Orlovsky on me?
I might go Orlovsky on you.
Did
I'm
you
sorry.
See, by the way, I didn't know much about this guy. He was one of the least read about players that I had gone through on some of the mock stuff. Blake Miller, the Lions pick.
No, I don't know a lot about him.
Go, just Google it on Twitter.
Okay.
There's a still image of him trying to block Reuben Bain, and Reuben Bain is almost at the quarterback, and Blake Miller's turned to the side like he was like a computer graphic player that's just lagging. And people are like, the Lions hit this pick?
Press the X button, press the button, block the button. Not doing it. We're going to take a quick timeout in draft talk. We will get back into it. We have audio, including a near miss for one player, or one team, I should say, trying to get a player, thinking they were going to get him, and then another team said, not so fast, my friend. So we get back into the draft, some other takeaways, including what do we make of poor Kenyon Sadiq having to go to New York. Poor bastard's got to play for the Jets. Thieneman lands in Chicago, all that still to come. But let's talk to Bill Orem, columnist of The Oregonian. He joined.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Just next. All right, welcome back in. Our pre-show for Game 3, Blazers and Spurs, continues. 105.1 FM, The Fan here. Good morning, everybody. Let's talk to our good friend.
Willie O.
Is he going to tease me today? Am I going to get a tease?
Oh, he teased us twice.
I think he's going to tease me.
He's gone a little viral for both. He thinks a certain player might be playing,
okay,
and a certain player might be coming to Portland this summer.
Enticingly looking at Bill Orem, the columnist at The Oregonian, at Bill Orem on Twitter. Go give him a follow, OregonLive.com. Bill, good morning to you. Why are you such a dirty tease?
I mean, that's a conversation for another time, I think.
I was going to say that's a conversation for you and your wife.
You
don't have to do that on air.
You think you're a good tease, Bill? You think you're good at teasing?
Yeah.
I just like telling people what I know and what I'm hearing. And, you know, one of the fun things about this time of year is, you know, I've had a chance to be around the Blazers a lot more than I was during the regular season. It's kind of taken me back to my NBA beat writing roots a little bit. And, you know, you see a thread and you start tugging on it. And sometimes you're a little surprised about what you hear.
Well, I'm kind of scared to text you anymore after reading your articles. I feel like I strike the wrong nerve at the wrong time when I reach out to you about your articles that I read all the time.
There's a reason for that. That's because you want to nitpick the smallest.
Yeah, he does.
Stuff.
He's a nitpicker.
And instead of like, wow, thank you for contributing positively to the media landscape in a city I love. It's like, why did you use an apostrophe in paragraph 9?
That's egregious. That's a lie. I've never done that. I'm not a grammarian. Now, that being said.
And he's making fun of your Christmas tree over here. God, he's just taking shots left and right.
You brought that up, Dirt. Don't even
relent.
Say that.
He never relents.
What I would say is me even reaching out about the article should be the compliment in itself. I'm always reading the wonderful Willie O and Bill Oram at OregonLive.com. Right now, though, I will say, for all the sourcing people are doing in the streets, I got a text last night on regards to your article that said Dame playing is a plus 850 on Friday. And I was like, whoa, those are pretty long odds that he's even going to play right now. Do you really feel like it's going to happen? We're going to see Dame Lillard out in uniform.
Do I think it's going to happen? I would not. Bet my house on it. I think what is interesting here is that when I woke up yesterday morning, I would have said absolutely no chance. This is a guy we've not seen play, you know, full court. As far as we know, he hasn't been scrimmaging. You know, he's looked pretty relaxed around the team. There had really been no signs of that he was, I mean, obviously he's been working out and rehabbing his Achilles, but there had been no sign that he was like attempting to really ramp up with a goal of playing this year. And, you know, there have been a couple of, you know, teased, to use your words, from, you know, Tiago Splitter and then the Blazers social team. And I mostly thought they were trolling. And then I started asking around. And basically what I've been told is that the Blazers are open to the possibility. And they, you know, it has not been ruled out. I had one person tell me yesterday, it's not the craziest thing to think that he could play. Now, so, I mean, that's a long way from him actually coming out on the court. That said, Dame does march to his own drummer in the sense of, you know, coming back to Portland was a bit of a surprise. I don't think a lot of people expected him to do that. And then, you know, the idea of him making a triumphant return during the postseason, you know, that would be the most like dramatic and theatrical thing that could happen. Now, that's a terrible reason to actually come back and to short circuit his rehab if that were to be what happened. But if he is truly 100%, if he has done the work to ramp up and we just haven't seen it, you know, there's a case to be made that he could really help the Blazers. I mean, they need shooting. Yeah. You know, does he need to be himself in this playoff series? Were he to play? No. I mean, you could run some actions for him and have him, you know, spot up, and, you know, he could be pretty lethal in this series or going forward. But I really think this only happens. I think it's in play if the Blazers are somehow able to beat the Spurs in this series, which I think is still a pretty tall order. Mm-hmm. You know, so I mean, if this series ends up ending in 5 or 6 games, as I think we kind of all sort of anticipated before Wemby got hurt, then it's probably off the table. But the fact that it's even being considered, to me, is the news.
Yeah, it would be incredible if it does happen. You just imagine the eruption in the arena. His first game back, who would have thought it would be in the playoffs based on where we were when we signed him a year ago? Bill Oram, our guest, columnist of The Oregonian, at Bill Oram on Twitter. Go give him a follow, OregonLive.com. Can find all of his great work there. There's so much in the news about Tom Dundon right now, and I'm sure we will ask you about that. Part of me is just like, can we just get to the offseason and focus on actual basketball? Because it's been a long time since we've had playoff basketball here.
Totally.
When you look at the game tonight, and I'll also kind of connect this back to game 2 and game 1 for that matter, what does Bill Oram make of Scoot Henderson and the way he's playing? Because we famously years ago had Myers Leonard light up the Golden State Warriors in game 4 of the Western Conference Finals. I think he had 30 points in the first half. And like 2 years later, he was out of the NBA. Certainly was never that level of player, but it ended up being kind of a flash in the pan moment of like, ah, remember that Myers Leonard game in the Conference Finals. Do we view what Scoot has done more as that or a light bulb going off? Like, how do you observe and evaluate the way Scoot is playing, which is certainly at a high level right now?
I mean, I have been really slow to believe in Scoot Henderson. If you go back his first 2 years, I just wasn't seeing it. The confidence that we saw with the G League at night wasn't there. His decision-making wasn't good. I just felt like maybe the Blazers had made the wrong choice. And, you know, and I think that you could still make an argument that they maybe could have done something different or better with the 3 pick in that draft. But in this moment, guys, I'm in on Scoot Henderson. Like, he has wowed me with his ability defensively, his buy-in defensively. That's something that has, you know, absolutely exploded since he came back from his hamstring injury. And then, you know, the Blazers are not putting all the decision-making in his hands like they did the first couple of years. They're not asking him to be, you know, the primary decision-maker on the floor. You know, you have Drew Holiday, and next year you'll have Damian Lillard. Denny Avia has been, you know, essentially the point guard for 90% of this season. So what that has done is it has really freed Scoot up to be Scoot and to be a spot up shooter, which is not something I think we thought was going to be part of his game. Right. And to, you know, be the kind of that secondary attacker. And it's been terrific. I don't know, you know, I think so. The Myers Leonard comp doesn't work for me because Scoot is getting it done with his defense, which is creating transition opportunities, yep. which is, you know, opening up the floor and spreading out the defense. Like, you know, that seems way more sustainable to me and something way easier to believe in and invest in. I don't know, you know, I don't think we're still seeing, you know, the signs of Scoot that's like he is a, you know, the Russell Westbrook, Derrick Rose level player that maybe the Blazers hoped they were drafting back in 2023. That said, like, he looks like a really, really good NBA player to me. And like somebody who now I'm like really in on being part of the foundation. Shaedon Sharpe, like, take him or leave him. You know, but Scoot Henderson to me has really separated himself as a foundational piece of this core in the same way that Jumaane Kamara, Donovan Klingon, and Denny Avdija are. I'd even take it a step further, guys. Ooh. And that is, you know, we've talked about, you know, you hinted at, you know, me mentioning that the Blazers are going to take a run at Giannis this summer.
Yeah.
That is true, but it is, you know, very much dependent on the ability to get Giannis to buy into an extension in Portland, which is a huge question mark, and that could kill it entirely. But, you know, the one thing that, you know, I've, in terms of like what the Blazers would want to offer for Giannis or any player they're trying to make a splash with in the summer, you know, I was told that, you know, hey, like, you know, essentially Denny, Tumani, and Klingon would be off the table in any kind of deal like that. And you're running out of players to put together an attractive package, but at least conceptually, I would want Scoot to be in that tier as well, given the way he has played in this series and in terms of the way he has separated himself from kind of the Scoot of the past. I'm really in on him. I think he's been terrific.
The hell would we think if Dame got sent in that trade? It's like, wait a minute. I thought they didn't want it and we wanted it back. What are we doing here? Hell, all right, we can't. Look, I hear everything you're saying about Scoot. I don't know what the Giannis thing will be. I'd imagine any team that's trading for him is getting the agreement that he's going to get the massive extension. So we'll have to wait and see. I just, the Dundon stuff, man, like it's almost impossible to ignore. I equated it actually coincidentally to Giannis trade chatter. I've already become exhausted by it. It's like, hey, Yurdie's cheap. It's like, yeah, like nine different times. I understand it. I totally get how teams operate and should operate and all that. Like, but also, it hasn't been very long. Like, there's got to be a window, as bad as some of the stuff is. I don't care about the T-shirt thing, but, like, you know, the coaching stuff and how he's operating in that realm and is he looking at other GMs and all that stuff. I have to kind of do a wait and see. And I think any rushing to he'll learn from this or this is definitely what it's going to be for the next 20 years and all that, I just find it a little bit premature from the media angle in our market. I know you've written about it. I know you've heard stuff about him. I understand he's cheap. Just what you've made of the Tom Dundon stuff the last like week or so of it just continually coming out and the being cheap and the masseuse and all this other stuff.
I mean, guys, we've been talking about the sale of the Blazers and Tom Dundon in the arena since what, like August?
Yeah.
And have I not been saying the whole time that this was going to be a wake-up call and a rude awakening for the Blazers, you for did. Blazers employees and Blazer fans? This is what Tom Dundon was advertised as. This is what he did in Carolina. You know, he gives zero Fs, if I can say that, mm-hmm. over the airways. Like, yeah. he doesn't care. And, like, if he does care, he doesn't show that he cares. He is, you know, I don't think that he is, like, a mean-spirited person. Like, I don't think this comes from a place of malice, but he has an idea about the way things are done and he's going to stick to it. He doesn't think a coach should be the you know, he doesn't want to spend $10 million a year on a coach because he doesn't think that the coach makes $10 million a year worth of a difference. I disagree in the NBA. Like, in the NBA, I think it's completely different than the NHL. I think an NBA coach sets the culture, has way more impact on the game. It's the face of the franchise. You know, I really feel strongly that that is an area that you should invest. Now, if you can score a great value or you can invest on the front end of a great coach's career, absolutely. But you don't start from the point of like, this is how much we have to pay, who will take it? So I have a lot of feelings and thoughts about like Tom's approach to things, but none of it's surprising, given what we have heard about him and what we know about him. Mm. And I think that, you know, like people are, you know, clearly reacting to the various, you know, cost cutting. Mm-hmm. I think people are right to be concerned, but they're reacting to the wrong things. There's still not a deal for the arena. There is still not a lease. You know, I know KGW reported this this week, and we have our own coverage on mm-hmm. this as well. But you know, the city is not a done deal by any stretch
yep.
when it comes to providing its piece of the arena deal. Tom Dundon is going to make that negotiation really, really difficult. And there are people on the city council who are prepared to draw a line in the sand. And you know, that is not the guy that you want to be like, you know, playing chicken with. You know, calling his bluff could have serious ramifications. And I understand the concept of not wanting to just capitulate to what the billionaire is asking for, but you also have to be prepared for the consequences of that. So I actually think in some ways, you know, the shirts, the coaching search, the checking out of the hotel, the masseuse, all that stuff is distracting from what actually really matters here. Like, it's part of the same pie, but I would be more concerned about the bigger picture stuff and the future of the team and the arena.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think it's a great point. And back to your article that you originally wrote on that topic. Last one for you. I'm just curious. Let's hope that the arena stuff gets resolved and clearer heads prevail. And all right, the funding is passed. Here we go. When you look at Dunn, and it seems like there's a kind of two sides of this coin. One is this is a disaster. It's going to continue to be a disaster. If he keeps cutting costs, this isn't going to work in the NBA. And oh my God, the Blazers are doomed for years of ineptitude. Or there's the Adam Silver approach. He was on a podcast that was like, guys, give him some time. Like, he's a smart guy. He's winning in the NHL. Like, he's going to figure this out and evolve based on what does or does not work. I'm curious, do you find yourself somewhere in the middle or one more on one side or the other of that argument of if the arena stuff is resolved, where this goes and what it looks like 5 years from now?
You know, I probably am in the middle, but like actually sort of tilting toward Adam Silver's perspective, which is, you know, once this actually gets, you know, right-sized in Dundon's mind, right? Like once he gets, you know, the organization to the size that he wants it to be, which is a really nice way of saying like, you know, fires enough people to get it to,
right.
you know, a manageable size in his mind, you know, once he sort of gets comfortable in the NBA, learns how to navigate. I think that's been part of this problem, is that a lot of it has been him just coming in and being himself without any regard for, you know, the way the NBA operates, functions, without, you know, it hasn't been very tactful, right? Like mm-hmm. it's just been sort of a bull in a china shop. And I think either the league and the city will adjust to him and that will become more normalized, or he'll adjust and bend a little bit to the way that the league works and he'll learn a little bit more about how to move within the league. And I think, you know, ultimately, the only question that matters mm-hmm. in matters like this is the team winning? And Dundon does have a track record of winning. I think that, you know, I think it is not an apples to apples comparison. I don't think he fully appreciates like how visible an NBA owner is. I can name maybe two owners in the NHL, and that's only because they own NBA or NFL teams. Like, it's not the same. Being an NHL owner does not have the same level of celebrity in this country that being an NBA owner does. And frankly, that's, you know, it is a symbol of such a degree of wealth that that's part of why Tom Dundon wanted the team, right? Like in terms of like growing his profile as a man of incredible influence in American economics. Like it's just like, this is what you do, but it comes with a much higher profile. And I think that profile is something that maybe he wasn't even entirely prepared for, because the level of scrutiny that he has encountered in the NBA, I don't think is like anything he faced in the NFL, or excuse me, the NHL, yeah. at least outside of the confines of Raleigh.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I also, the only thing I chuckle at, I don't like all the cheapness and the stuff that gets reported out. It's not great. I'm being a little more open-minded, I think, than some of my media peers. It's also a very gossipy league. It's like the new girl at the high school who's trying to sit at the table, and the minute she says hi awkwardly, that girl goes and tells 10 other girls, she said hi with such attitude and rude. And like, I feel like it's almost a movie in that sense. And so it's like when people are texting me about it, it just...
They have a burn book? Is that what you're telling me?
It's just, the NBA media is different than all the other media. I'm not saying other leagues don't gossip. It just feels very gossipy and third-hand information. Like, you yourself literally...
contradicted the report of he's only offering $1 million for coaches. You had a report that he offered four. Now, you can say four is short for Mike Malone.
Yes.
But you yourself reported it was four. It wasn't one. If it was one, it'd be like, holy crap here. And you might still be worried about it, but it just, it's such a gossipy league. And that, I kind of come to hate the league in some ways because of the way it's covered. It's like, do you hear about the draft or the trade intel? And it's like, well, what about the sport itself? And that's what this is. The guy's at a Final Four drinking a beer, meeting with a college coach, and somebody snaps a photo or hears a conversation secondhand, and it becomes this big firestorm. So I'm not trying to absorb Tom Dundon of any blame here, but also, it's a gossipy-ass league, dude, and people talk to people, and what happens when people play telephone? It gets way worse as the story goes on.
Are you going to allow me to defend my journalistic integrity, or are we going to go to break with you having
sorry. BS I'm not even me? Going at Same you. No, I'm word. Giving you credit. You contradicted the $1 million report. It's like he offered four to four and a half to Malone. Yeah, that's not so one.
So here's the nuance around that, right? Well, there's multiple things. One, they were never going to hire Michael Malone,
right?
For a multitude of reasons. One, he's not a good fit for this roster.
No doubt.
Like, there's a reason that he didn't work out in Denver, and like, as a master tactician and a half court guru, that does not fit the way the Blazers play at all. So like, Michael Malone was a bad fit. But the idea of contacting Michael Malone or being interested in Michael Malone would be a symbol of their aspiration. And I think maybe Taylor, you could sub in Taylor Jenkins, who just went to Milwaukee, mm-hmm. there. As a proxy for Michael Malone in this conversation. But I don't think I ever reported there was a cap. I think people have landed on this idea that there was a cap of $1 million or $1.5 million. No, right. That is a target. That's what they would like to pay.
Right.
But they also, like, they're going to do their due diligence. They are canvassing the league. You've got a bunch of people who haven't worked in the NBA who are trying to get smarter about this. So, like, talking to people and saying, like, who should I talk to? You know, that is all part of this process that they are doing. But when they did like have conversations about Michael Malone or coaches of that tier, they did show a willingness to come up and to invest more at a level of $4 million, which would make him about the 28th highest paid coach in the NBA.
Right.
So it's not serious.
Yeah.
And so like literally what I was told was that, yes, we've had conversations with about those people. They never did speak with Michael Malone. That's just simply not true. But they have had conversations about those people.
Mm-hmm.
But those conversations got capped at like a way low ball price tier. And what I was told was, and we may still end up hiring a coach from, you know, college for $1.5 million.
Yeah.
So they want it both ways. They want people to think or to believe that they are like at least open to going higher and doing the, what I would consider to be the more reasonable or prudent thing.
Mm-hmm.
But like the chances are still that they're going to do exactly what we've been saying, which is find somebody who is going to take a BS offer to coach the team and be a head coach in the NBA.
Right.
So, I mean, there's nuance around this. I hear what you're saying, but yeah. I feel like I really want people to understand the nuance of this situation.
Yeah, totally fair. I hear Brandon Roy's available. He's not currently coaching right now. Let's go make that hire. We went way long there. We're going to be in a little clock trouble here. This is what you do when you talk to Willie O. When Willie O's on the phone, you go long. We love chatting with him. Columnist at the Oregonian, OregonLive.com, at Bill Orme on Twitter. Thank you so much for the time. Enjoy the home playoff game tonight, and let's do this again soon.
I'm looking forward to it, guys. That was fun. Thanks for letting me ramble.
There you go. Bill Horam from the Oregonian. Let's break.
Let's break.
I don't know what next segment will be, but it's whatever's less than a Diet Johnson is what it is.
A shot of Johnson.
We got some more Draft and Blazers stuff to get into, and that's still around the corner on the fam. All right, welcome back in. Swags just delivered some breakfast burritos.
Did you go machaca? You did?
I got my machaca over here.
I've never
here.
Had machaca.
I got a big day ahead of me. I need to get a burrito in me, you know?
I got chorizo.
You got to fill my hole. Swags filling my hole today, baby. Welcome back. It's great to have you back. We missed you.
He's just awkwardly standing between us. Hi!
Also, unaware that, you know what? We got to go because we're already.
Well, he's the one. It's his fault.
It's all his fault. He shows up and we go over the clock again. Look what
Brandon
happens,
was distracted.
Man.
I tried to break. That's
it was.
And he wasn't.
We were
so.
Ready to break. He wasn't paying. He's talking to people in there.
That's why I talked at the end there.
God, how about that Bill Orme, huh? Just won't shut up, will he?
Yeah. Well, also, he took kind of the wait-and-see approach.
Which I think is a rational approach.
I think it's okay to say that. You could also be concerned.
Yes, without a doubt. There are very concerning things.
But I want to see if he
learns. And I also am with him in terms of the city council stuff. That was always the concern about the funding. It wasn't the state.
The state was
going to shove it through, yeah. And then you get into Multnomah County, and you're going to have some, you know. Exactly. So... I'm with him there. Big concern. Lots to get to in the final hour of the radio show. Guess what, folks? It's almost here. We will spring the line. We got stuff to gamble on today. I ain't gonna gamble.
I mean, really?
Yeah, I ain't gonna gamble. I almost hit a hockey parlay last Friday. I went 2 out of 3.
I'm kind of riding a heater right now.
Exactly. Let's ride our heaters together at 9:30. Some more NFL draft thoughts that we haven't gotten to yet. We haven't talked about the Duck guys, where they're going. Spring games tomorrow. I know you talked about that yesterday, so probably not a lot of time in the final hour. Game 3 tonight. Lots to get to. Load of final hour next. 105.1 FM The Fan.
On Aspire with Emma Greed, I sit down with people who don't just dream big, they build big. From Mark Cuban to Mel Robbins, we talk about mindset, ambition, and the work that actually moves the needle. Listen to Aspire with me, Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast available now.